From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Tonight, we dedicate this program to all veterans, past and present, this Memorial Day, especially those who made the ultimate sacrifice. Next hour, shifting populations and major global changes. Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. And before we truly begin the program, I would like to say goodbye to a dear friend of ours, our Gary Patterson, who has been a guest on this program no less than 36 times, suddenly passed away Friday night. Some of you have heard about this. We've had it on our website for a couple days. It is with immense sadness that I say this. He was a great friend. He was a dedicated guest, and he was an excellent rock historian. He wrote the book, The Walrus Was Paul, The Hellhounds on Their Trail, and Take a Walk on the Dark Side. He had been a live guest of mine at various live events. He died suddenly. They're going to perform an autopsy soon. He was 66 years old and just a wonderful person. And I got to tell you, in terms of being guests on this program, he never missed a beat. He was just amazing with everything he did. He was a native from Tennessee, and he will be missed. Our Gary Patterson, dead at the age of 66. A relative of the suspected gunman in the Mississippi shooting rampage that left 8 people dead said he was devastated that the family dispute ended tragically. He said, "I'm devastated. It doesn't seem real." Vincent Mitchell said shortly after his stepson-in-law, Willie Corey Godbold, was arrested, that he and his stepdaughter, that they've been going back and forth for a couple of years with domestic violence. Well, Willie Godbold is 35 years old, accused of walking into Mitchell's home in southern Mississippi just before midnight Saturday, opening fire, killing Mitchell's wife, sister-in-law, and one of their daughters. He then killed a deputy, William Durr, a 2-year Sheriff's Department veteran and former police officer in a nearby town, and then killed 4 more people at 2 other homes before being arrested. Jeez. North Korea has fired a ballistic missile from its eastern coast early Monday, dealing another blow to efforts by South Korea's new government to improve relations there. And now the Japanese prime minister is vowing to take action with the United States against North Korea after this missile test. Where's this all headed? Let's check in with Dr. Jerome Corsi from Infowars.com. Jerry, it's getting tense.
I agree, George. And I think what's in the works is going to be an attack by the United States on North Korea very quickly. We have reportedly a third carrier task force headed to the region. It may be headed in relief of one of the carriers there now, I'm not sure. But it's certainly a step up, with South Korea conducting joint drills with the USB-1 strategic bomber. I mean, all the signs are there that President Trump has had enough of this, repeated almost daily, trying new missiles. I guess this is the 9th successful launch of an ICBM type. This one that was launched recently was the Scud type, but it's a rapid deploy, a very accurate, short-range missile capable of carrying a nuke. And I just don't know how much defiance and advancement we're going to allow North Korea before we take military action.
I agree. Now, what can Japan do when they say they're going to join us? I mean, what do they bring to the table here?
Well, Japan is really right in the range of these North Korean missiles, so they're going to at least bring resolve. I mean, Japan does not have the military forces. They might contribute financially, but Japan has actually been conducting drills of evacuation and anticipates they could be hit by a nuclear strike, which is not out of the question. I've said from the beginning, George, I think war with North Korea could be catastrophic, certainly a land war.
Devastating.
And I'm not even all that in favor of a military strike. It's really a last resort, because we don't know what the escalation or the consequences of a strike could be. It always goes better in planning than in reality. And when things go wrong in an actual military attack, the way it could escalate is unpredictable and very frightening.
And we've got about, what, 35,000 troops in South Korea?
That's correct, George. And we've also got, you know, be considered about this, the Pacific and the ability even of an EPM attack, because North Korea has submarine capability, and even a, you know, a missile fired high into the altitude, which North Korea has demonstrated the ability to do, although I'm not sure off a submarine yet, has EMP possibilities. And this could wipe out major sections of the grid across the United States if an EMP attack were successfully launched by North Korea. The key issue is that, you know, we've tried sanctions. We've now really worked with China. I think President Trump is going to reach a point where he's going to say, this is it. North Korea needs to stop. And I hope we take an approach, if we do have a military attack, that it's short-termed and specific in scope and function, and we do not engage in a prolonged war with North Korea. I think that would be disastrous.
I think it's going to be aimed at wherever we think Kim Jong-un might be.
Well, that would be good, too, in terms of, you know, I mean, I'm not sure regime change should again be our goal. That's a long and complicated process. But certainly, taking out a nutcase like this could have certain advantages. I mean, you just can't have a rogue state like North Korea, and we're going to face it again with Iran, developing missile capability to launch a nuclear weapon and threaten neighbors and the world without doing something about it. And if last recourse is military, I think President Trump is contemplating that now that he's finished with his trip to Saudi Arabia and to Europe and the Middle East and to Europe.
I agree. Jerry, we'll talk to you this week, I think. Legendary golfer Tiger Woods has been arrested for driving under the influence in Florida. Woods, a Jupiter, Florida resident, was taken into custody at 3 o'clock in the morning Monday. The golfer booked into a county jail. He's 41 years old, charged with a DUI, released on his own recognizance. It's unclear if Woods was tested for drugs or alcohol. Credit scores for U.S. consumers reached a record high this spring, while the share of Americans deemed to be some of the riskiest borrowers hit a record low, a potential boon for lending and economic activity. Let's check in with the registered investment advisor, Mitch Shedlock. Michael, what do you think of that?
Hey, I was going to ask you that, here.
I'm doing the interview, Shedlock.
These analytics came out, and they said this is going to have a ripple effect across the economy. And the director of research from TransUnion, that's a credit rating agency, said it's going to have a domino effect. But I'm sitting here thinking about this, George. These people lost their homes through foreclosure, and we have these predictions that they're going to go out there and do it again.
Do it all over again.
Right when home prices have gone through the roof, and right when the economy looks like it's seriously in trouble. I did a pretty good job predicting the last GDP estimate, you know, and since then, April, durable goods down 3%, wholesale inventories down 3%, retail inventory, 0.3%. The trade deficit widened by 3.8%. That's a subtraction from GDP. U.S. federal tax receipts are running below expectations. New home sales in April, down 11.4%. The up and down the line, housing starts were weak. The surveys, the regional Fed surveys have been really weak. And so here we are, credit scores are improving just about the time, George. We're about ready to do it all again. Is that how you see it? That's how I see
it the same way, Mitch. Thank you so much. Well, as Americans celebrated this Memorial Day, some will remember the life and legacy of President John F. Kennedy, who was born 100 years ago on Monday. While the 35th president left a mixed legacy following his assassination in 1963, Kennedy remains nearly as popular today as he did during his time in office, and arguably created the idea of a president's brand that has become commonplace in American politics. I found my teacher, Miss Leonard, who was our English teacher when I was 13 years old. She told us that Kennedy had been assassinated. She may pop on the program tomorrow. My gosh, it's amazing things that you can find on networks. NASA is set to make a major announcement about its first mission to touch the sun. They want to send a probe that will get closer to the sun than ever before, facing extreme temperatures and radiation levels before it shuts down and melts. Dr. Sky Stephen Cates with his weekly report of what's going on up there. What do we got for us, Stephen?
Well, George, you're right on target with this. Solar Probe Plus to touch and maybe kiss the outer atmosphere of the sun. We call it the corona. That is amazing. We'll all be standing by for hearing more about that. But eclipse, we promised the listeners here on Coast 84 days to count down the big total solar eclipse. And I do appreciate the emails that you sent me at drsky@cox.net. If you'd like to do that, I'd be more than happy to answer questions about the eclipse. But George, in this edition, we've picked five general places that experts say are probably the best if you're looking to be in the path of totality. Madras, Oregon, because of its good weather in the high deserts of Oregon. Casper, Wyoming, because of the ease of getting in and out of the city in case you have to move quickly. And the four and five solar eclipses that I've seen, the total, it pays to be able to get out and into your car and move quickly. St. Joseph, Missouri, Carbondale, Illinois. They get to see the most of this eclipse, 2 minutes and 41 seconds. And they're at the crossroads 7 years later, George, to see the another total solar eclipse on April the 8th of 2024. Nashville, Tennessee is great, and Columbia, South Carolina. But there'll be many more places we'll be talking about. But in conclusion, the live sky that everybody loves, the moon now waxing beautiful into the west after sunset. Follow that in your telescopes and binoculars. The best sight of all, George, for the week, early morning risers looking high into the east northeast. We'll see the planet Venus at its most distant away from the sun, about 46 degrees away. It's amazingly bright because of this acid cloud atmosphere. Don't miss it. It'll put on a great show as we move into June of 2017. Dr. Sky reminds everyone simply this: always remember to keep your eyes to the sky.
And we do with you, Stephen. Thank you so much. President Trump visited Arlington National Cemetery to perform one of the most solemn duties as Commander-in-Chief, laying the wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier. The president gave his first Memorial Day address after laying the wreath, like so many presidents before him, as part of the ceremony to remember, honor the men and women who died fighting for the United States. One person who never forgets is the head of the Twilight Brigade that assists veterans, Danion Brinkley. Danion, hello there, sir.
Hey, George, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for joining us for a moment here.
This was my 22nd year of making rounds at the VA, and George, for the first time in a really long time, I'm really proud of what I see. This new group at the West Los Angeles VA, Ann, Scotty, Anthony, James, and Kerry, they're making a difference. And I have to commend the President of the United States of the kind of effort that he's putting forth. All these people were talking today about the loss and people who paid the ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah.
But when you sit around and think about that, these are men and women who served, but they wanted to make sure that everybody had a really good time today. And today at the West Los Angeles VA, there was probably 2,000 people that turned out to celebrate that day. So as we all close this Monday or wherever it is, know that there's a difference being made in the VA, and I'm really proud of what I'm seeing happen. This is my 33rd year as a hospice volunteer, and the Twilight Brigade is 20 years old this year, and I'm really proud.
Well, we're proud of having you as a part of Coast to Coast, Danion, and for the things that you do for our military. Thank you so much.
George, one more thing. The fact that this is something I've noticed, they say there's 22 veterans a day. It's close to 40 a day that's killing themselves, but I'm watching to see those numbers reduced. So there is something happening in the American culture that's causing guys to take a really good look at themselves and giving themselves a second chance. So for all those who are thinking about suicide, please pay attention and please call your VA. And George, there is a guy in the hospital at the VA who is a Twilight Brigade listener. His name is Jerry, and he wanted me to make sure he said hello and thank you, Coast to Coast.
You got it. Thank you, Danion. And in tribute to Memorial Day, here's my version of a soldier died today. He was getting old and punchy, and his hair was falling fast, and he
sat around the Legion telling stories of the past, of a war that he had fought in and the deeds that he had done and his exploits with his buddies. They were heroes, everyone, and though sometimes to his neighbors his tales became a joke, all his buddies listened, for they knew whereof he spoke. But we'll hear his tales no longer, for old Bob has passed away, and the world's a little poor, for a soldier died today. And now he won't be mourned by many, just his children and his wife, for he lived an ordinary, very quiet sort of life. He held a job, he raised a family, quietly going on his way, and the world won't notice passing, though a soldier died today. You know, when politicians leave this earth, their bodies lie in state, while thousands note their passing and proclaim that they were great. Papers tell of their life stories from the time that they were young. But the passing of a soldier, it goes unnoticed and unsung. The politician's stipend and the style in which he lives are sometimes disproportionate to the services that he gives. While the ordinary soldier who offered up his all is paid off with a medal, perhaps a pension, small, so it's easy to forget them, for it was so long ago that our Bobs and Jims and Johnnies and Jessicas went to battle, but we know. It was not the politicians with their compromise employees who won for us the freedom that our country now enjoys. Now, should you find yourself in danger with your enemies at hand, would you really want some cop-out with his ever-waffling stand? Or would you want a soldier who has sworn to defend his home, his kin, his country, and fight until the end? He was just a common soldier, and his ranks are growing thin, but his presence should remind us that we may need his like again. When his countries are in conflict, then we find the soldier's part is to clean up all the troubles that the politicians start. If we cannot do him honor while he's here to hear the praise, then at least let's give him homage at the ending of his days. Perhaps just a simple headline in the paper that might say, "Our country is in mourning, for a soldier died today." Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Since the 1860s, 400,000 have been buried at the Arlington National Cemetery from the United States and 11 other countries. Now, a native Californian, Ron McDonald, has been an accomplished and published photographer for more than 20 years. While traveling and photographing in Europe, he visited many historical cemeteries, including the Omaha Beach Cemetery, where he found his uncle's final resting place. And his love of history drove him to tell the untold stories in his book, Arlington Anthology, Field of Honor, for those who reside at the Arlington National Cemetery. I had the privilege of meeting Ron at one of our luncheon series, and he told me about his book, and here he is on Coast to Coast for this hour. Ron, thanks for joining us this Memorial Night.
Oh, thank you, George, for having me on your show. It's on this nation's most solemn of holidays.
When I was researching your book and researching the Arlington National Cemetery, I could not believe that there were 400,000 buried there since the 1860s. My God, the amount of lives that were given for the country.
I know. It's just, it's incomprehensible to understand. And they've actually had to enlarge the property, and or they were going to run out of room in 2020.
Tell me more about how your book, Arlington Anthology, came about.
Well, it's actually a combination of several things. My uncle was buried over in Omaha Beach Cemetery. He was a Marauder pilot during World War II, and his plane was hit by flak, and he went down with the plane. And he was listed as missing for about a year. But when I was over there, I found his grave, and you stand there amongst all those other tombstones, and you reflect upon what each of those men must have gone through and what they had done. And you know, we are only given a date of birth and usually a date of death, but it's the dash in between that represents an individual's life. And that is kind of where I started it from. I had known of a book a long time ago called Spoon River Anthology by Edgar Masters. It was a classic in which it took place in a cemetery in a little town called Spoon River. And it was kind of like a Peyton Place of the town, and the dead people would talk and tell about their lives. And that kind of brought a spark to me in the sense that, you know, here in Arlington, where we have, you know, the highest of people, you know, presidents to, you know, ex-slaves that are buried there on the property, from generals to the common soldier.
That is amazing. Ron, stay with us. We're going to talk more about Arlington National Cemetery this Memorial Night and your book, Arlington Anthology. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back in a moment with Ron McDonald with his book, Arlington Anthology, as we talk about the Arlington National Cemetery with some incredible stories of heroes that are buried there in a moment. And welcome back to Coast, Ron McDonald with us. We're talking about his book called Arlington Anthology about the Arlington National Cemetery. And Ron, you were telling us about the impetus to write this book, of course, finding your great stories at Omaha Beach. And you found many stories at Arlington, did you not?
Oh, the stories are just absolutely incredible. I mean, one after another, the things that these people have done just would blow your mind.
Let's talk about some of these people that are buried there, some of our great soldiers, and some of the stories. Which ones caught your eye?
Well, there are several, I think, that struck me. But I think that the one that I think that really is more prevalent to today, it was about Brigadier General James McCubbin. He was a Revolutionary War soldier. There are Revolutionary War soldiers there. They were brought in and buried there on the property. But he was taken prisoner and placed upon the Jersey, the British ship, prison ship, the Jersey. And I don't know if you know anything about the prison ships, but they were pretty horrendous. And he was placed in the hold of the prison ship and for 3 years without fresh air, without sunlight, fed whatever they felt like feeding him, scraps. A lot of the people died from diseases and dysentery, and, you know, the smells can be horrendous.
You can only imagine. Ugh.
And after 3 years, he was released, and George Washington, actually, he was personally made him Brigadier General in the Maryland State Militia. And as 1912 started raising its ugly head, in which the war with the British eventually started, he spoke out with opposition to those who favored censorship. And he stood up for a man, for his freedoms, to be able to have freedom of speech. He was a Federalist, a publisher, who criticized the United States regarding the war. And eventually what ended up happening is the people rioted. This guy even showed his bayoneted wounds that he had from the Revolutionary War, and the people ignored it. He was beaten to death, and someone else there in the party actually had hot wax poured in their eyes. But what amazed me was that this man stood up for freedom of speech for someone, you know, and fought for it, too. It was kind of an ironic story.
You write your stories, Ron, as if the people are still alive.
Yeah, the reason why I did that is I felt that I wanted people to feel that they were actually being talked to by the person who resides there. I think it made it more personal in reading the book, and that's one of the reasons why I did it in the first place. I mean, because when we go through cemeteries, you know, we see the beginning date and the end date, and we want to hear almost their story of what they're saying to us, you know, and that's kind of why I wrote it that way.
Is it emotional to be out there at Arlington?
I can't even comprehend. I mean, standing out there amongst all those crosses, it's got to be something that affects everyone in their own personal way. There is a section out there now that is section 20, which is probably the rawest nerve of every place there in the park, because that's where our Afghan and Iraqi soldiers are being buried. And you have people there leaving things by the grave sites. They'll have picnics by them. They'll talk to them. They'll sleep by the grave sometimes. You know, it's just an emotional thing to see and an emotional place to be.
Ron, how does somebody find their loved one buried out there?
Well, basically what you can do is you can go to the main office there, and they will have a listing as to where, and you can, they will take you out to it. In doing the research for the book, I went to the websites and for Arlington, and then I also went to the Medal of Honor websites, and I also looked into military archives. So it took me 8 years to write the book, and I'm working on a second one, and I'm hoping it's not going to take me that long. But, you know, it's just amazing trying to find some of these stories.
Now, the stories you've talked about, I think, are true heroes. Can any military person be buried at Arlington, or did you have to be in some kind of combat-type operation?
Yeah, there is special circumstances now. I believe that they have to have either like a Silver Star or a Bronze Star.
Okay.
The couples, I mean, they used to be that a married couple used to be buried there together, and that's not, I don't think, allowed anymore.
Because of space primarily?
Yeah, primarily it's because of the space that's not allowed anymore.
What is the message you would love people to take away when they read Arlington Anthology?
Well, you know, I think that what it really is that, I mean, we as people go and face adversity every day, and it's the choices of our adversity that defines us. And by the stories in which you're reading, you see that the dead are speaking to the living in the sense that they show you the bravery in the face of adversity and the hope and how to go about to overcome it. It's how we approach life and how we tackle our defeats and how we deal with the things that we have to deal with that makes us the people that we are. And it speaks to us that way.
I noticed how proud you were when I met you and we were talking about your book. And I got to tell you, I really congratulate you on that.
Oh, thank you. That's awful nice of you to say. I you know, and there's so many people there that I mean, it's not just military people. There's civilian. I mean, there's 3,800 ex-slaves that are buried there that escaped out of Maryland and Virginia. And at the height of the Civil War, they put them up and called Freedmen's Village, and they taught them trades to assimilate them into society. And then when smallpox and scarlet fever hit Arlington and Washington, many of them passed away, and they're buried there on the property, just listed as citizen. There's actually four African American Medal of Honor recipients from the Civil War, and nobody knows these things. You know, there's actually really a total of 16 of them, but nobody knows that there's four of them that are actually buried there on the property. And there's I guess the story that I told you, then that I think you got affected by a little bit, was that of the first person in the book is a woman.
Yeah.
And her name was Vinnie Remy Hoxie, and she was a sculptress, a prodigy. And she was picked by Abraham Lincoln to do his bust. I mean, he picked her primarily because, you know, first, she was very talented, but second of all, she came from a very poor background like himself. And she spent a half an hour every day for 5 months with the man. And in that time, she got to know him, sculpted his bust. And then when he was assassinated, she was the first woman commissioned by the United States government to do a full-length statue. And she was given his coat that he wore that night at the theater.
Oh.
And she went to Italy, to the Carrara marble pits, where Michelangelo picked out the marble for the Pietà on David, sculpted it there in Italy, brought it back to the United States, and today it stands in the Capitol Rotunda for every American citizen to see. And they say it's the most lifelike rendition of Lincoln there is.
That is an emotional story.
You know, there's stories of
yeah. Pick a few more for us.
Okay.
I'll let you pick them.
All right. Okay. Let's see here. There's another one here by Robert Hopkins.
He was a captain, wasn't he?
No, actually, he was sergeant. He was a chaplain.
Okay.
And what makes him unique was he was actually captured, taken prisoner, along with 2,300 other POWs during the Battle of the Bulge. And he was put into a Stalag prison camp, POW camp, run by the SS. And they were brutal. And for many months, you know, he was there in that property. And at one point one of the soldiers had passed away, and they finally agreed to allow a flag to be used for this gentleman. And so they buried him in a makeshift casket, this individual. And Sergeant Robert Hopkins resided over the funeral. And primarily it's because the Nazis wanted to film it and show that they were actually...
Propaganda, right?
Yeah, propaganda, basically, yeah. But what makes this story unique is the flag. The flag was made from two sugar bags the British had put together. And they had stolen, and it helped create the flag. And then they painted it with blue, and a combination of the British blood was for the red, for the flag. He carried this flag around and was used for over 300 POW funerals during World War II. They hid the flag so the Nazis would never get it and find it. And when he finally escaped, he brought it back home. And today it stands in the 2nd Infantry Division in the museum at Camp Red Cloud in South Korea. But his when he passed away, it was draped upon his own coffin. You know, stories of Captain Herbert Rosage, Vietnam War. He was a POW for 2 years, and he was kept in the
2 years.
A cage.
Can you imagine that?
This one is just blows me away, because he was kept in a cage, and he was walked around barefoot. But the cage was, 2 feet wide. 3 feet tall. And
you have to crouch down, don't you?
Exactly. And he was kept in that for 2 years without a mosquito net. And so the mosquitoes would cover him and just,
No exercise. Did they let him out at all?
Well, I imagine they let him out at some point. They don't say whether they let him out or not, but I imagine they did obviously let them out at some point. But not very often. They throw him back in the cage again, and they feed him bad rice or whatever. So they were all, him and a lot of others were malnourished. He eventually had jaundice, but they would parade him around to the villagers. And he understood French, and he also understood Vietnamese. And so they finally gave up parading him around, because the villagers saw how prideful this man was. He hadn't lost his faith. He had...
Yeah, their propaganda wasn't working, was it?
It wasn't working at all for him. And so the last time anybody heard from him was the rest of POW prisoners heard him singing God Bless America at the top of his lungs as they were taking him away.
I love that.
When
they have their events at the cemetery at Arlington, do they give them 21 gun salutes and things like that?
Not all of them. I mean, they can request that. A lot of them don't have it, and some do. It depends whether they have full honors or not, if they give them full honors. But they perform at least 25 to 30 a day, if you can comprehend that. At the height of Vietnam, there were at least 40 a day. So the sound of taps is played quite often.
Constantly. Oh, my God.
On the property.
Constantly. What is Freedman's Village?
Well, Freedman's Village is exactly what I had talked to you about. Freedman's Village was the camp in which they put up during the Civil War, in which they kept the slaves that escaped out of Maryland and Virginia. They let them have cabins, and they had them let them have their own gardens, and then they taught them a trade. And that's
Who was Freedman?
Well, I think it was an analogy to free man.
Ah, okay.
So, but there was actually several Freedman villages later on in after the Civil War. I think there was one down in, I think it was Alabama, that had one of Freedman's Village down that way too. But there were several around the United in the South and all.
What would you say, Ron, was one of the most emotional cases that you looked at?
It was a story of a medic. Some of these medics were just absolutely heroic gentlemen. I mean, but this gentleman, the firebase got overran. It was in Vietnam, and the firebase got overran. And he went around trying to take care of as many of his soldier brothers that he could. And
a hero.
And eventually what happened is a mortar shell came in and blew off both of his legs. and he had his buddy tourniquet his legs up, and he crawled around on his elbows and his stomach to the other Marines that were there and took care of them until he finally passed out.
I remember during the Vietnam era where our soldiers were ridiculed when they came home, and I hope to God, Ron, that we never have to go through that again, that kind of treatment.
I mean, they were ashamed to come home with their uniforms on, you know? I mean,
yeah.
People spat at
I mean, now you see what you see a soldier at an airport, people go up and thank their hand, shake their hand and thank them. I mean, during the Vietnam era, those poor men didn't want to be there, or women. They didn't want to go, but, you know, don't blame them.
Well, I think part of the thing was is that Vietnam was the most media ran war that we had ever known. I mean, the photographers were constantly there, the press were constantly there, and it was feeding that information to the public, and they were seeing what war really is. It's not pretty, you know. It's not glamorous.
No, it's not pretty. This was a horrible war, one that we should never have been involved in. And look what happened after we left. I mean, Saigon fell, and the North gobbled it up. It was just unnecessary. We lost so many lives because of that tragedy. But it's not the soldiers' fault.
No, they're called to do their duty, and they do their duty well and with honor and respect. You know, it's not about a flag. It's not about a country. It's not about a border. It's about the guy that you're standing next to.
The woman now in these cases.
Or the woman now. Yes, exactly. It's the person. If that's their family, that's all they have when they're at that moment. And so it's not about race. It's not about any of that stuff, you know. And so there is no division at that point. And in fact, there is no division there in Arlington.
I was in the Navy 9 years. Never saw combat, none of that. But the guys in my unit, I'd give them the shirt off my back, and they would do the same for me. And there was that kind of camaraderie that you don't find, Ron, in many other places.
Yeah, my dad was in the Navy also. He was a swabby, as I like to say. And he was on a destroyer escort during World War II, and so he went to the North African campaign, and then he was out in the Pacific. But I've had an uncle that was in Korea, and I had another uncle in the Navy, and I had another aunt that was in the War Department that actually did the writing of letters. So,
and so honoring our troops on Memorial Day, would it also be the right thing to do to honor our fallen law enforcement officers, too?
Well, you know, in my opinion, it is, too.
Me too.
You know, I mean, they're out there on the front lines, and they're out there to defend us and to try and protect us. Yeah, I can imagine there's probably some bad ones, and there's always some good ones, and that's the way in life, period. You know, but on the whole, you know, they're there to try and help and protect us and serve.
Absolutely. Where do we get your book, Arlington Anthology?
Well, you can actually get it on Amazon. You can go to Amazon. You can look under my name if you want. If Anthology is
Ron McDonald. I didn't want to call you Ronald McDonald.
It's okay. I'm used to it. I'm getting teased more now than I did ever before. The character never came into fruition until the late 60s.
And we've got the link for the website at coasttocoastam.com. The name of the book, folks, Arlington Anthology. Ron, thank you for joining us. I'm so glad we met at the luncheon. Up next, we're going to talk about upside, profiting from the profound demographic shifts ahead, and there are many. We'll be back.